Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey team, welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. This is Mark Ellis speaking, and we're going to turn you over to one of our all-time favorite episodes of the show, and it's the season of giving, so why not replay the holiday episode of Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong for you all. First of all, we have a very special guest with us on this episode. It's Billie Piper. I believe she was promoting Rare Beasts at the time, which is a wonderful performance. You also know her from Penny Dreadful, accomplished actress, musician, all that good stuff. And she was fantastic talking about this show that sees Kate Winslet and Cameron Diaz sort of swap wives, or at least living quarters, for the holiday season. So you have Cameron Diaz, who's stressed out in Los Angeles, and she goes to the English countryside. And then you have Kate Winslet coming from the English countryside to a beautiful palatial estate in L.A. Are they going to meet significant others? Are they going to get out of their own way? And are we going to celebrate Christmas and maybe even New Year's by the end of this movie? And of course, this episode of RT is Wrong. It was a fun one. You could probably tell by the sound of my voice. I love watching this movie. I think it's an understated Christmas classic. How do you feel? How did everybody on the panel feel about it? Well, that's what this show is here for. So without further ado, enjoy the holiday episode of Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. It's your girl, Jacqueline, and back with Mr. Mark Ellis. Pleased to see you, sir, especially given everything that is going through the news and in our airs right now. Seriously.
There's a whole lot going on, Jacqueline, but it's always great to be on this show. This show's my norm. This is what centers me. You know, if our lives are a game of tag, I look at Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong as base. This is where,
oh, yeah,
where nobody can tag us. If you're playing freeze tag, I don't know if you ever got into TV tag when you were a kid. Did you ever play that one?
I have not played TV tag.
So TV tag is like, if I tag you, you're it, unless you say the name of a TV show. I guess that was hard to do when we were kids. And so if I went up to tag you and you said Brady Bunch, then I'm like, oh, okay, I'm still it. I got to go find somebody who's doesn't own a television.
Oh, I think that one would be a hard one for me if you asked me to like name a vegetable. Like, I'd be out after four. Just kidding.
You're out after carrots? Okay.
I'm out after carrots. Or maybe name a holiday tag. Oh, that's why they pay us the big bucks, because
quote a line from the movie The Holiday.
Or just go down the holidays. I mean, by the time you get to Arbor Day, this is going to be hard. Like, you can get through Christmas and Valentine's Day, but like, yeah, quote a holiday.
I love that. So if somebody tags me, I just think of any movie Gary Marshall directed in his last 10 years of working, and then it gets really tough. But we're kind of covering not really all holidays, but like, as this is the holiday.
Yes.
What we're talking. It's the not a holiday. It's the holiday.
Yeah, and it requires the because this movie is epic. Yes, we're talking about Nancy Meyers' film from 2006, The Holiday. It currently has a 49% rotten score, but an 80% fresh audience score. And we have a very special guest with us this week. I cannot believe this. Any Doctor Who fans are probably literally like with their earphones close to it, because you probably read the tagline. That's right. We're talking to Billie Piper, star of such incredible things from like I Hate Susie, Secret Diary of a Call Girl. Of course, as I mentioned, she was a companion on Doctor Who. And she's here to chat with us about her directorial debut, Rare Beasts. But she's also here to defend defend her love for our selected film, The Holiday. So before we bring her on, Mark, please, sir, if you will, give us your synopsis of The Holiday.
See, this is why I love this show, is because we bring on people who sing and direct and write and act, and all I have to do is give a synopsis of a movie I just watched again last night, and that would be The Holiday. So you have our two leads, Kate Winslet and Cameron Diaz. Kate Winslet plays Iris, and Iris is just not doing too well in relationships. She has this sort of on-again, off-again with Rufus Sewell, but she wants to cut him off once and for all, and she feels like she needs to get out of town to do that. Meanwhile, in Los Angeles, you have Amanda, played by Cameron Diaz, who's like, look, my job, I am this big-time Hollywood trailer producer, and I just got too many things going on, and my personal life is a mess, thanks to Edward Burns. I need to get out of town, too. What do you know? They find each other's places on a home swap website, because this movie came out in 2006. A home swap website. They swap homes. They go on holiday to each other's places and they live it up for a week. Unbeknownst to them, there's a gentleman in each town who's looking for sort of the same thing. Those gentlemen are played by Jude Law, who's going to romance Cameron Diaz, and Jack Black. Yes, kids, Jack Black is going to romance Kate Winslet. They meet. Do they live happily ever after? Well, at least until New Year's Eve, I guess. It is one of the more modern classic romantic comedies, especially around Christmas time when this movie takes place.
Love, love, love it. I think they end up falling in love and heading off into the sunsets. And Cameron Diaz does a movie studio company. COVID has taught us she can do that anywhere. She'll be fine. She'll be fine cutting trailers from London. Let's keep it real.
She can stay in Surrey. And yeah. I think shortly after February, they probably had some like weird Fleetwood Mac sort of romp with all four of them. And they just figured it out.
And he's a book editor. You can edit books away from offices. That's the one thing now. It's like now there was like this romantic comedy back in the day, Go the Distance, about a long distance relationship. That
going
doesn't work. Yeah, going the distance. Yeah, that one is not a thing anymore because we've learned we can be at home. But we're going to take it back to the time when this would have been a separation and would have caused a breakup, back to 2006, with a little segment where our review curation manager, Tim Ryan, tells us what the critics and audiences were saying about The Holiday back in 2006. Let's do the little segment we like to call 2 Minutes with Tim.
2 Minutes with Tim.
The Holiday has a particularly strong pedigree. It's got four big stars at the top of the marquee in Cameron Diaz, Kate Winslet, Jude Law, and Jack Black. And it's directed by Nancy Myers, the writer-producer of Private Benjamin, Baby Boom, and the two Father of the Bride movies, as well as the director and producer and or writer of The Parent Trap, What Women Want, and Something's Gotta Give. So this kind of thing is totally in her wheelhouse. But whether The Holiday is a slice of warm, feel-good comfort cinema or a big slice of cheese is a matter of taste. It's at 49% on the tomato meter with 158 reviews, but it does have an 80% audience score. So what did the critics have to say? In a Rotten review, Mary F. Poles of the Contra Costa Times wrote, "The problem with Nancy Meyers' romantic comedy, The Holiday, is that it is contrived, too long, and insufferably cute." However, in a fresh review, Carrie Rickey of the Philadelphia Inquirer wrote, "It is a fizzy champagne cocktail that provides a pleasant buzz, many smiles, and Jude Law with the role of his career." The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, "While it's certainly sweet and even somewhat touching, The Holiday is so thoroughly predictable that audiences may end up opting for an early checkout time." Anyway, that's The Holiday. And Jacqueline and Mark, if you were a melody, you'd be only the good notes. Back to you, folks.
Aww.
Thank you for that, Tim.
I know. Also, I'm not surprised. It's 49% of the tomato meter. Remember this, Mark. The critics' consensus is supposed to reflect
the critical consensus. I like that fizzy champagne line, though, because that's exactly what this movie is. It's just a nice, pleasant first sip of champagne sort of buzz that you can hopefully coast on. We'll see how we actually feel about the movie in just a little bit. But I think that's why Tim Ryan is the best in the business. Well done, Tim.
Yeah. Also, an apt description for our guests. I think that she is also like a little fuzzy sip of champagne herself. And I am ready for us to give ourselves a glass. That's right, folks. It's time to bring Miss Billie Piper on to the program, to Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong, where she's going to talk with us about The Holiday. This was recorded separately, so have a listen to our chat with Billie. Billie, Hey, welcome to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's an absolute pleasure and I'm flaccid that you're having me on the show.
Girl, I can't believe you're saying that. Seriously, for all the other Doctor Who fans fainting that she is like, you know, anyway jazzed at us, let me tell you, it's the other way around. But we're here to talk about your new film, your directorial debut, Rare Beast. But before we get there, you want to go ahead and I think correct the record on something that I feel similarly about, and that's The Holiday, which is currently rated 49% rotten on the tomato meter, but it has an 80% audience score. Yeah. And I'm one of those votes. So I'm guessing you're thinking Rotten Tomatoes is wrong because it's below 60% and it's not considered fresh. But why is Rotten Tomatoes wrong about The Holiday? Give us your log line on that.
Well, it's so funny because when I read the list of films, I was like, oh my God, they can't about The Holiday. They just can't. And then when I started breaking it down in my head ahead of this interview, I was thinking, what? Like, The Holiday is really, really great and satisfying at Christmas. But yeah. when you try and sort of fight for it for the rest of the year, I found it actually quite challenging. So I don't know how much I can pull you guys apart right now on reflection. But there are some things that I feel very fondly towards. And let's talk about it.
No, we will. And also, we've got a little bit of LA London swapping going on here. You're not coming to my house, but I feel it. Mark, did you? I know you revisited this for the show. I don't even think I know your holiday thoughts, and I know a lot of your movie thoughts.
Well, you're about to, Jacqueline and Billy, because it seems like Billy is clearly on the side of fresh. Jacqueline's on the side of fresh. And I just got to say, The Holiday is one of the worst movies to not watch at Christmas. I love this movie. I absolutely love this movie. Rotten Tomatoes is so wrong about this. I don't know why we can't have nice things. And look, is my LA apartment the best home swap opportunity somebody in London could have? No. No, it is not. But if anybody wants to come swap with me and take care of Molly the Wonder Dog for a week, I'm here for it. You can feed her and I'll go to London and I'll have a great time with Jude Law or Cameron Diaz or whoever's there. I love this movie because it's like we get two full rom-coms in one movie.
Yeah,
that's true.
I do love that. Also, like, real talk, like, I live in LA, not in a house that is anything like the gorgeous things that you see in Nancy Meyers movies. But, like, Surrey, like, maybe I'm just the country girl. I was like, no, I'm about that. Like, your clawfoot bathtub and that kitchen. Like, please. I was so excited out. But let's break it down. We're going to talk it all through. We're going to make our case for why Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. Let's head on over to our movie talk section. Okay, so The Holiday, I have to say, I obviously think Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. I think it's brilliant. I love Jude Law, Cameron Diaz, and Jack Black in a romantic film, too. Like, that was just so brilliant. And, of course, Kate Winslet is everything. But when did you see it first, Billy? Like, when was the first time you viewed it? Was it in the theater? Was it at home?
No, it was at home, and it was probably about a year after it came out. So I missed the hype, I guess. So I was coming at it probably with a flu because I always get sick around Christmas. And I would have been watching it at home. So I was schnooky and wanting to feel like a warm and slightly hysterical. And I get that from that movie. It sort of plays, I am not sentimental at all. And you'll see that from my film. Like, it's so polarizing, the idea that I would like this film at all and make a film like Rare Beast. And I'm only ever sentimental with my children and sometimes my partner. When it comes to these sorts of films, I don't know, they just they buckle me, especially if there's anything British in them. It just plays into so much sort of fond memories of, you know, living and growing up in the UK. And of course, when you watch it in the movie, it's also horrifically far-fetched.
Yeah.
But there are some things that feel kind of beautifully familiar. I'm always happier in the movie when I'm in the UK.
I could see that though. Because I'm sorry. I mean, Arthur's great, like the guy that makes her time in LA great, but they've left out all the other things that make it not great.
Yeah.
Well, she never has to like travel too far. She goes to like one dinner, she goes to one event, but she lives in a home that allows her to just be isolated, which is why, a lot like Billy, I enjoy this movie so much because I can identify so much with Kate Winslet's experience and Cameron Diaz's experience, sort of in different ways, because Kate comes to this beautiful LA mansion, and that's how I feel when I go on the road to do stand-up and I get put up at like a really nice hotel. If I'm at like a Four Seasons or a Hyatt, I am going to play with the blackout curtains. I'm going to play with all the cool technology. I never have to leave the room, and I feel amazing. By contrast, Cameron Diaz getting to this nice little quaint country house and deciding like, look, my heart's broken. I have no friends here. There's nobody to talk to. So I'm just going to make my own fun. She opens up a bottle of wine. She puts on loud music. She starts dancing around. I have done those things as well.
Yeah.
And so, like, the dudes are great. Jude Law is great. Jack Black's great. Eli Wallach is awesome as Arthur. But I love watching these two women continue their romantic journeys. And that's from a guy who is pretty much at the end of his romantic journey. I don't have a soul anymore. And so I'm pretty
He's
much
not
just
joking,
out.
Billy. He's really not. Like, I would
I'm
say
done.
It, but
I
his,
understand.
His, he
I
reserves.
Think we're all at the end of our romantic journey. Like, can we do this anymore?
But the holiday makes me believe in the holiday. The power of the holiday makes me believe in finding true love. There may have to be a home swap involved, but that's what a great romantic comedy to me does, is it makes me have that fantasy. In the same way, if I'm watching Star Wars, I believe that this could happen in outer space somewhere. When I see romantic comedy, I believe that this could actually work out for old Mark Ellis for a couple of hours.
No.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And it's a real reflection. It's a real sign of the times I'm at. I think people were genuinely a bit more optimistic when this movie was made.
True.
2006?
Right? Like, was that when it was made? 2006?
Yeah, 2006. And that was what I was going to say. So I didn't see this in the theater because, as folks listening to the podcast know, that sort of like late 2000s to, you know, early 2010s. That was the lots of alcohol in bars days. I was more like Jude Law in that respect, but like every night of the week. And so like my movie watching was small, but there's a station here in the States that they play this as like part of the Christmas rewatch. It's TNT. They always have the holiday and Christmas story. And I caught it on one of those. And now it is one of these, like, I have to watch it every Christmas. Like, it's my diehard in a lot of respects because I'm like you. I'm pretty cynical about romance outside of movie theaters, but like inside movie theaters, I'm like, of course Bridget is going to be with Darcy. Of course he's, you know, she's going to say, I'm the girl looking for a boy at the end of Notting Hill. And this movie has one of those scenes too at the very end, which is one of my favorites. But Billy, what about you? What is your favorite like scene from the movie? Because I have a few, but it's mostly towards the end. So I want to see if you have some maybe early ones.
Oh, mine are early, actually. Mine are in the office in the beginning. Because even though I've never worked in an office, and, you know, I do feel like these themes are slightly pushed. I just know that kind of woman and that kind of man and that kind of environment on some level that feels so bleakly British that I sort of relish that. I mean, it's really not the first scene in the film, but it's something that I feel particularly tied to just because it's all so hopeless and twee.
So that for to set it up for folks, this is early when Kate Winslet's character,
like the first thing, yeah,
Kate Winslet's character finds out that Jasper, the man who refuses to let her fall out of love with him, which is like a real thing, where the dudes just like keep her parked with like little bits of affection. He tells her he finds out that that he is engaged.
Iris, I have a tip for you.
Excellent.
A wedding was privately announced earlier today that I don't believe any other paper in town knows about, and I want you to be the first to report on this particular union, as it is between two of our most esteemed colleagues. May I introduce the newly engaged Sarah Smith Alcott and Jasper Bloom.
And she is never known, and she's just like literally heartbroken about the idea of it. And I do love that one as well. It is one of my top ones because in addition to the bars part, I was also Iris in for the early part of the 2010s and late 2000s. So, and I have a feeling Mark
very
was
interesting.
Maybe a little Jasper? Probably not. He's a Jesuit boy. I don't think you're a Jasper. But
I got a little, look, all cards on the table. Every guy's got a little bit of Jasper in him.
Yeah.
And every guy has a little bit of Edward Burns's character. But that's why those scenes are so crucial to this movie, is because we are instantly rooting for Kate and for Cameron. I'm rooting for Kate more than Cameron because like Cameron's got this great gig and she's just really working herself too hard more than anything else. But I do love the scene where we kind of fourth wall it and it's like the movie trailer voice narrating Cameron's life. I just thought that was like a cool trick. That you wouldn't normally see in a rom-com. But Jacqueline, as you know, my favorite Star Wars movie is Return of the Jedi. One of the big reasons is because we all win at the end.
Yeah.
And I love the winning at the end of this movie where it's New Year's. We just had Christmas and it's New Year's and everybody's actually meeting for the first time.
Yeah.
Because you had this nice home swap and you had great results in your personal life. But can we actually all be friends in real life? That scene lends me to believe yes. So the ladies can pair off and dish, and Jude and Jack can find something to talk about. The kids are having a good time. I love that the good time continues through the new year because that just shows the promise that this isn't just some one-off thing. We're going to have many more holidays with this cast. I want a sequel. Give it to me.
I am with you on that
sequel.
One. Yeah.
I'm
with
you on
that
one. I'd die for a sequel. I mean, just the concept is so unbelievably dated, and the sort of women just hanging around for men in this really desperate way now just suddenly feels so tone deaf. So I would be interested to see what steer it would take in a sequel.
I wonder if they'd be like, really, we moved our entire world for those two? And I would love for them to also make reappearances too, because they got to set the other side of the story correct. If I was going to talk about a scene though that sort of like hits down for me, I'm a TCM classic movie girl, and basically every time Arthur comes on the movie, my heart melts. Like I think of my grandpa who was literally sitting me down to watch TCM. He was not working for Louis Mayer, but I felt like he was the embodiment. I felt like he was the embodiment of Billy Wilder inside this movie, which if you don't know, he wrote one of the all-time great romantic comedies, The Apartment. And I just felt so much of that energy in this. And so, every time Arthur comes on, but the very first scene where she rescues him and you see his Oscar, and then also when he talks about you're a leading lady playing like you're the best friend. Like, that is a great line. Like, you're not the best friend. Those moments between Iris and Arthur. I love Jude Law. I love Cameron Diaz. There's so many other great moments. Cameron Diaz, like, tipping up the wine at the store. Kill me. Live. I know that moment, girl. I feel it. Also, going on vacation and eating what you want. Like, that is, like, another emotion that I was, like, so feeling. What about you, Billy? Is there another scene that sort of like when you think about this movie fondly, you're just like, yeah, this is the one I'm going to pull up on YouTube maybe?
Oh God. I guess the Jude Law arriving. Just because it's so brilliantly cringe. It's like, it's, I don't know, there's just something so unbearably charming about it.
It's perfect. And then it's such a perfect scene.
Yeah. Oh, it's a perfect scene, and you're taken to this world where you imagine yourself at Christmas and you're in this sort of cozy environment and Jude Law turns up, you know what I mean? And you're going to get
seriously
at the local pub, and you don't have any sort of obligations, family obligations, and it's all to play for. It's a nice scene because it allows for fantasy. That's what I like about it. It allows you to imagine your life at Christmas like it used to be, like 20 years ago.
Honestly. And like it, you know, in a lot of ways, I mean, like, this is like early days of like social media. Like, those two would have just DM'd for like,
that's why we like it so much.
Yes, yes. Like,
it's actual people meeting in real life and in different ways. And so, like, I like in this movie, I think a normal romantic comedy is like a Snickers bar where it's just everything's packed into one. This movie is like a Twix where we get two different sides and we have one relationship angle and then we have a totally different one, because the way that Jack Black and Kate Winslet get together, that's much more Mark Ellis, where it's like you just become friends and then you realize, oh, wait, I really am actually in love with this person. With the Jude Law arriving, with Billy scene, it takes place early-ish in the movie because Cameron's character has just gotten to England. She's settling in the home. She's trying to figure out it out. She's trying to figure out how she can have a good week here away from work, dealing with her heartbreak. Jude Law shows up, and the genius of that scene is that we have been set up to, as soon as we meet Rufus Sewell, we're like, wait, I don't like this guy. I don't like this guy. And Edward Burns is like, oh, this guy's got ulterior motives. So we assume the same thing with Jude Law. And it's a smart move by Nancy Myers to be like, no, I'm going to turn that on its ear a little bit later in the movie when it's revealed, no, this guy's actually a widower. He's been dealing with his own version of heartbreak and he's got two little kids. And so it's we meet a character and then we learn more about them in the next scene. And it totally changes that scene when I rewatch it, because this is one of the movies I'll rewatch every Christmas. And so it just lends a different sort of subtext to when Jude Law first shows up, knowing what's going to happen.
Oh, and can we add, Rufus is the great actor, Rufus Sewell, who plays the Jasper. But let's talk about a typecast. Like, anytime he shows up in a movie now, I'm literally like, what's he about to do? So anytime he's like a good guy, I'm like kind of happy about it. I'm like, he just has all those faces like, you might be doing some nefarious things.
I know.
It's so interesting that we talk about Jack Black, because, you know, Nancy Myers is known for these movies and for just casting movie locations, like houses that none of us would ever be able to afford, but like want to live in, because like, of course, like Cameron Diaz's house is just so crazy, over the top dream LA house. But then also Kate Winslet's house is like the perfect, most idyllic British cottage that also nobody can afford. Like, let's be real. But she's just like built this, I don't know, it's just, it's an industry of these type of stories. And I find them to be really, like, I don't know, you just kind of love them. And you think of things like the intern and Something's Gotta Give and It's Complicated. Billy, do you have like a favorite one of hers besides this, obviously, that
what
you
women
like?
Want?
Yeah. Is that What Women Want? Is that? Yeah. That one, she, yeah, that is. Yeah.
Oh, did she direct? Yeah.
I think she may have written that one. Let me see.
Yeah, she worked on it, but I think that was an anomaly for Nancy Myers because it wasn't her original source material.
It wasn't hers. Yeah, that one, I think you're right.
But she did such a great job with What Women Want.
She did such a great job with it because it's such a ridiculous idea, but it's also something that as women, you always go, I wish you knew what was happening inside my head. But also the performances are so real that you are completely sucked into this really big idea and really big sort of formal theme. And it's really clever, but also really emotional.
Yeah. And then also, I mean, like, look, I mean, this is the woman who started with Private Benjamin and then gave us Baby Boom. There's just like, let's really talk. And another thing, too, like Rob Reiner obviously gets a ton of credit for The Princess Bride, but that's, I mean, sorry, Princess Bride, Father of the Bride. That was her screenplay as well. Like, I just,
oh my God, yeah, I totally forgot about that.
Like I said Princess Bride, I meant Father of the Bride. But yeah, it's just like another example of, you know, I'm a writer stan. Shock, a writer is a stan of other writers. And it was also why I loved what you were able to do with your film, like coming out of the gate, not just saying, hey, I'm going to take a script that I just got, but also saying, okay, I'd like to direct one as well. Also, before we get into Rare Beasts, I wanted to also tell you, Billy, you're not the only one. We have a book called Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. It's sort of like the precursor of this podcast. And let me tell you how like hotly contested the holiday was. I wanted to write about the holiday, but like there were so many on the Rotten Tomatoes editorial staff that wanted to write about it that like it was like I think my editor Joel like pulled a name out of a hat and I didn't make the cut on that one. But it's a great essay. And if you ever get a chance, I feel like this is the Bible for you want to start a movie fight with someone, but also really love lovely movie Step Brothers. I mean, I Willow is another one that's in here.
Willow is amazing.
Yeah. So if you ever get a chance, that's like a good one that is sort of like, I think, an extension of what this show has to offer as far as like, hey, look, you know, maybe they didn't get the snapshot of the time. And that's what's crazy about this is it's a beloved film. I have to ask you, do you have like a person you've watched this with or like, do you have like a personal sort of like, because like I feel for me, this is like a girlfriend Zoom movie.
100%.
Yeah, like.
Like, absolutely. No man wants to watch this film with
except
me.
For Mark.
And I've had like probably 4 boyfriends since this, like meaningful relationships since this film has been around. And none of them have wanted to watch. They can do the beginning and then they're done. it's definitely a girl, like, you know, just a sort of sad, drunken girl fest.
Yeah, I live for
not
it.
Not necessarily just sad either. It doesn't have to be sad. It could be, it could just be giggly Christmas girl.
Yeah, I'm down for it. Wine. There needs to be wine. There's a lot of great wine moments in this movie, and I think we got to keep with it. And you should show it to somebody that's Gen Z so they know what a blockbuster looks like.
Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely. And people are smoking inside, which is just such a lovely, fond memory, you know? Like when you see it, you're like, ooh, it was fun.
Yeah.
Right. Well, back in the days before, I had to hold the table for everyone smoking. So you go out with everyone, they all go outside. And then you look like the ass because you're just, no, there's 10 people that I'm with. I'm taking up this whole table. They're all outside smoking right now.
Yeah.
But I can watch this movie. I mean, look, I can throw this movie on at any time. And I don't need a season. I think it's a good vacation inspiration movie too, because there must have been a boom in home swapping after this movie came out, because it was a successful movie. It did over $200 million of business worldwide. Wow. And so I think a lot of people saw it and they're like, even if it wasn't home swapping necessarily, can I trace back to, was this the movie that started the germ in somebody's brain to create Airbnb? I'm going to go with that.
Hey, yeah, honestly, this is before the apps, because I don't even think many people had smartphones at this point, right?
Like no smartphones.
God, aging ourselves. Look, I could talk about this movie for literally hours and I would, but we definitely want to make sure we leave enough time to talk about your film, Rare Beast, because first of all, like I said, we kicked off by talking about the fact that we saw it. This is something that you wrote and directed. So I just, if you can, set us up with, you know, what is Rare Beast and what do people have in store?
So I guess the film in, like, the headlines of the film are, I wrote this film when I, well, 9 years ago, my second son had just been born and I was leaving my 20s into my 30s. And I felt like all the cultural messaging and the cultural steer was that we can have it all as women. And by the way, you should have it all and you should be really good at it all. And all I could, even though maybe there was some goodwill in that messaging, but all I could sort of see around me was like common crisis where everybody was attempting to do that and falling apart. Like it was costing women. And there seemed to be this, the beginning of this huge shared anxiety, which I think has probably got progressively worse since I started writing this film. I wanted to talk about what it really looked like and what it costs to be a modern woman and not sugarcoat it. And you know, it's heightened as a movie, I think, but it's dealing with sort of, it's quite divisive in a way, this film. And it will entirely depend on what you've experienced in your life as to whether you can marry with these characters, because you're meeting them and they're all at the end of their rope and they're really, really coarse with each other. But they have nothing to lose, and you get that from the beginning. And so it's just a journey. It's a journey of a sort of modern relationship and not just a sort of romantic relationship, but a relationship with the protagonist, with herself and her own sense of worth and self-being, self-care.
I'll preface this question by saying you've known me for about 20 minutes now, Billy. You probably can already tell I'm super lazy, and so it is beyond me to think about how somebody can write something like this, can star in something like this. But the directorial aspect of this, it's your directorial debut. Where does the energy come from? Because it's just got to be such a little of it must be trial and error. But like, I'm just so in awe of people who can direct and who can lead and can just get an entire crew to seek out this one vision that started with you. So what was that process like? What were some of the surprises, the curveballs that you didn't expect being your first feature that you directed?
Okay, so the curveballs were, well, the first challenge was getting it financed, because on paper, this film is like, are you joking? There's four very unlikable characters. It's really theatrical. It's very aggressive, and it's even worse when you just cold read it. So that was a challenge, is getting the right person behind it to champion it and convince wealthy people to give us their money. That was hard, but it's a game of nerves making an independent feature, and I've been in them as an actor, and you're not, you know, it doesn't really touch the sides. You know what I mean? As an actor, you're like shielded from pretty much everything, and which is why we're all so spoiled and gross. And then as a producer, even it's just a game of nerves as to whether the film will be finished, be made, be completed, be make it to post, have money for post. Mm-hmm. Then promotion, like so many things can go wrong when you have no money and no time. And what you're relying on heavily is goodwill from the crew. You know, and that is a tall ask after a certain point. So the sort of game of nerves of it was, that was the bit I found most challenging. Also, I was pregnant, so it was physically challenging.
Oh, come on. This is too much.
It's, you and Emerald Fennell.
I am a Fennell. Glutton for pain and punishment.
You and Emerald Fennell, and I think Greta too, all like had these like crazy movies that they pushed out. But I'm a fan of that filmmaker and friend that I know, and incredible cinematographer Rachel Morrison shot this totally dope commercial about working moms, because she's one of the big proponents for how that needs to be a part of filmmaking now, making it to where these female filmmakers and storytellers. And so I feel like when women like you do that, it's like, look, you didn't lose your ability to craft stories just because you're incubating a human. And it just makes what you did even more. And Serena Williams for winning a tennis tournament too. Like that one's like crazy dope.
That's wild.
I like have a hard time getting out of bed each morning. So the fact that they're able to do all of those other things in combination, again, super women, literally. But also, since this is a directorial debut, and you talked about this earlier, I guess it's a gift that you've had such this incredible career, because you've gotten to work with both, you know, in television and in film, these directors that you can pick up things from. But I could also say it's like, but it's also sort of like, you know, but not this. Like, it's like when you get engaged and you go to a bunch of weddings and you're like, not this. What was something that you sort of saw that you were kind of like, okay, I'm really going to take this great thing? And maybe what was something, you don't have to say to the person, where you're like, when I get on set behind the camera, this is not the way I want to really execute it. Because I think that's beneficial, both what to do and what not to do.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I certainly know how to talk to actors, at least I think I do. I find that more often than not, directors, probably because of the nature of the job, which is where you sit back and look at things and observe, and you're voyeuristic on, and there's always seems to be some sort of social delay with directors, where like they just totally not all of them, but a lot of them aren't always socially adept to deal with very sensitive people, which is actors, you know, like it's crazy to me. Some of the things that directors say to actors to get what they want. Sometimes it works, but sometimes it really, really, really doesn't. So I felt very comfortable with the actors. I also cast it really well, I think. I knew what these people could do. They have a lot of background in theatre, and I let them just go with it. I didn't feel like I had to steer them all the time. Like they were really capable, competent, skilled people. But, you know, I mean, I guess that was my strong suit in the filming of it. That was something I felt comfortable doing, and something that I definitely pulled from as my own experience as an actor. It's getting very dark in my house. Is it too dark for you guys, or is it getting moody now?
No, we can totally see you. It's very ambiance, trust me.
Yeah.
Into the night.
Perfect lighting for me. It's almost like you're about to tell us a really scary story.
I'm looking at the little image of myself. Like, this is like me at camp. This is like being at camp now.
I like it. Digging it.
Gather around. Billy's going to tell us the story now. Rare Beasts, which is first of all in select theaters and on demand August 20th. So make sure y'all check it out. I guess my last question for you real quick, Billy, is it when you're writing something like this, did you find it easier to write for yourself or for other people?
Well, I guess when I was writing it, I didn't imagine me saying it. So it all felt like it was for someone else.
Okay.
Even though I knew I was going to be in it, I didn't imagine it for myself. But it's very satisfying writing things for other actors. It's really, really satisfying. Yeah, it's really, really...
going to make them say that.
Also for your friends, it's really satisfying, like, putting some little things in there that personal gripes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that was the thing I felt about it, because it's chaotic in so many ways, but I also feel like that's a female mind, especially a female mind that's trying to deconstruct whatever a dude is thinking, which again, that is like a math problem unto itself. But like, you really, I think, kind of captured modern dating in a way that like I wouldn't expect, given like, is this like, were you just robbing all of your single friends that you would call over and be like, all right, bitch about this dude this week? Like, what is the...
Yeah. No, actually, I felt not all of it, some of it.
Yeah.
But some of it was from guys as well. Ooh. It wasn't just from girlfriends. Some of it was like, you know, the male frustration with not earning as much money as their counterpart, you know, or me too, like just some of them just not feeling it, some of them being very put out by this modern female liberation, I guess. That felt quite fun to expose.
Yeah, it is equal. Like, this is not, yes, it definitely dissects the female aspect. She's our main protagonist, but this is more about modern dating. And I think that's why it's really going to be interesting for folks to see it. It is out now. Rare Beast is out in select theaters and available on demand. Please check it out. Billy, I cannot say thank you enough for your time
and
chatting about this. The next thing you put out, please come back. You can take us to task for any movie. And I will have to say this, like, legitimately, Secret Diary of a Call Girl is probably one of my all-time favorite shows. Like, I can quote passages of it, which is sad for me to say to you, but I literally adore that show. Please. I am still mad you left him on that pier.
Oh, I know.
Like, girl, like, you're lucky I like you, because I was crying when I saw that. I'm just kidding.
He's awful. She's a ruthless bitch.
But hey, you know what? But that made the story, and that's the character. Like, I can't be mad at it as a writer, because that is the character, and you just performed it so great. And you don't get that beautiful, you know, find someone like Miu and the Adele in the background if she doesn't leave
on
the pier.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Well, thank you again, Billy. We're going to let you get out of here so you can talk more.
I'm just going to go to bed now before...
You're just going to go back into the darkness? Like,
Jesus, I'm going to go move into the darkness and tackle a bear.
Be very careful stumbling around in the dark. And this is the new crew. For me, this is the 2021 holiday viewing experience. We all need to get on a Zoom together and fire up. We'll do a double feature of the holiday and then your movie, Rare Beast. That's going to be my 2021 holiday season.
Oh, and I almost forgot.
That's a very confusing time.
Yeah, I almost forgot, Billy. Since you're a movie TV buff, is there anything that we should be watching? Maybe something that's over there that'll come over here soon. Is there anything you want to recommend for folks to check out? Like, I just started White Lotus, and whoa, that one is different.
Mm. I haven't seen anything recently. Oh, God, I'm not cultured at all anymore. What can I say?
You have a newborn. You're allowed. You're allowed.
Really have no recommendations.
I talked to Tom. I actually spoke to Tom Ellis like a month after he had his kid.
Oh,
and he's
yeah.
like, I will talk to you about Peppa Pig more than I will talk to you about what's in theater. So you're totally allowed.
You want to know something that's quite sweet? Tom Ellis's daughter and my son are in a band together.
Shut the front door.
Yeah.
And I love both of y'all. Y'all were great interviews, both of you.
They're in a band called Galaxy, and they played their first show about a month ago, and they're really cute.
We're supposed
That's
to talk to him for Lucifer.
Streaming recommendation.
That is way better than a streaming recommendation. The fact that your kids are in a band together, the talent. Oh, I love it. I'm going to tell him. We're supposed to talk to him for Lucifer. I'm going to tell him that we chatted. This is so cool. I will. Okay. Thank you again, Billy. This has been great.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.
She's so fun. Like, seriously. Like, first of all, she's in London. And so she was way past her bedtime to speak with us, which I really appreciate. But she was still, like, tons of fun. And you can tell, like, loves movies, and I like her like dry, cynical wit. Like that's my level of comedy. Nothing
it
against
like
you, Mark.
We were doing our own sort of holiday reenactment because you're in Los Angeles, she's in London, and I just hope I wasn't the Rufus Sewell character. I hope I wasn't Jasper.
I mean, let's be honest, we're all a Jasper in someone's story. That is the one thing that life
will
teach us.
Arthur in everyone's story. I just want to be the really, really old guy with some good tales to spin during dinner.
Well, I'm not going to dispute that, but Arthur also worked in Hollywood for several decades. And so I'm going to go ahead and say there's some chapters he wouldn't want published. Okay, before we like slander Arthur, the most lovable character in history anymore. Like, I don't know. I think that this is what's great about this one is it's found a secondary audience. As we talked about, like this is one, like I've seen holiday marathons. I'm pretty sure that TNT does like a holiday marathon. Am I right? Am I wrong?
Yes. Yeah. They'll marathon that, but sometimes I think Lifetime does a holiday marathon. Lifetime might not even wait until like Christmas time proper. I think it's like the day after Thanksgiving. Lifetime is like, open the floodgates. Let's get the holiday. Let's usher in the Christmas season.
Yeah. And look, this is like kind of a timeless show, but Lucy and our lovely researcher Mark Hoffmeyer let us know that there's actually a Netflix rom-com that is going to maybe sort of like plot, like prey on this sort of premise, but maybe reverse it. It's Ashton Kutcher, Reese Witherspoon, Your Place or Mine. And it was written by the girl that wrote Devil Wears Prada. So I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt.
Okay, yeah. Ashton Kutcher and Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Two best friends who live on opposite coasts swap homes for a week and see their whole lives change.
Are they going to fall in love? Or are they going to fall in love with other people?
I think they may fall in love with other people.
This is straight up disrespectful.
I don't know if it's disrespectful.
Nancy Meyers did it first, and we don't need another one.
I mean, look, it's written by the woman who did The Devil Wears Prada. And anybody who can give Meryl Streep a line, that's all. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. If she had written Going the Distance, probably not. I like that movie, but I'm not giving you the benefit. I'm not giving it the benefit of the doubt, though. That's what I'm saying. Like, Devil Wears Prada is one of those things where, like, you made this. I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt. Robert Rodriguez, he made Dusk Till Dawn for the rest of his career. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. That's what got me to Spy Kids opening weekend, ladies and gentlemen. So there's certain things, like if you make it, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. So
I'm sorry there was a lack of vampires in the Spy Kids franchise to satiate your taste. But I mean, look, if you look at the holiday, I think one of the cool things that I learned behind the scenes on this, thanks to Mark Hoffmeyer, our great researcher, was that Kate Winslet apparently had never had a movie role written for her, like with her in mind, until this movie. Nancy Meyers told her that she's like, hey, no, I actually wrote this with you in mind. And Kate's like, get right out of town. She's like, no, I wrote this for you. And apparently Nancy Meyers saw Jack Black in School of Rock and is like, I like this guy. He's speaking to me. He's communicating with me as an audience member. And I think in retrospect, it might have been considered like, I don't know if risky is the right word, because I don't know that Jack Black would turn anybody off.
No, I mean, for a studio picture, yeah. Like, let's be honest. They want to basically cast someone like Taron Egerton, who's the pretty boy they cast when they want to pretend that a pretty boy is not a pretty boy.
Right. And so Jack Black just walks that fine line of not being the classic, like, look like a movie star, somebody worthy of Kate Winslet in our superficial judging eyes, but he also isn't so schlubby that her getting with him at the end, you're like, this would never happen. Like, you kind of believe it.
Yeah, no, I definitely believe it. But that's like, I mean, especially Hollywood at this time. It means, dude, even Hollywood now, Taron Egerton is going to play Seymour in Little Shop of Horrors. And I'm just like, Seymour is supposed to be like a down and out loser. And I'm sorry, there's not enough glasses in the world that'll make somebody tell me that Taron Egerton isn't like a stone cold fox. Like, but like Jack Black is great in this role, and I think he's believable, but you'd have to imagine that they wanted more of that, like, sort of Rachel Lee Cook and She's All That transformation, where you're like, do y'all not see this? Like, we see that this person is hot underneath these glasses kind of person for this, but I like that they kind of pushed through it on that one. Also, I would be remiss if I didn't say, as much as I love The Holiday and I love Nancy Meyers' work, she does fall in this, like, filmmaker who never believes that anybody brown has shown up in some of these locations. Like, she's got a rep for that. And I'm not going to, like, not point it out. Because, look, I think somebody said, Nancy Meyers, the woman who shows you rich white people's kitchen throughout various settings.
I can speak to that, true. Too. I mean, I'm never going to own property that looks anything like even the Surrey house, much less the Los Angeles palatial estate. that Cameron Diaz lives on. I mean, that is just, that's another level. I don't even know that I would be able to afford either one of those properties for like a week on an Airbnb.
Airbnb, yeah. Those are Airbnb lux, and I'm not living the Airbnb lux lifestyle. Like, let's be real. Although I will say, both of us are getting to a certain age. Somebody tweeted this the other day, and it made me think of this movie a little bit too, because it said, I've reached the point in my life where I will never enjoy an Airbnb over a nice hotel. And I think I've reached that point in my life as well.
I'm there, but then sometimes you just get an Airbnb and it, like, I don't need to get into the culture. Like, if I'm traveling somewhere, I will put myself into the culture when I deem fit, but I also want to be able to retreat to a nice static,
hermetically sealed. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I still want to be in a normal creature comfort hotel, which I do really enjoy hotel and the fancy lobby water. But I think my final thing on the holiday is this, Jacqueline, is if we're looking at the future of these two relationships, I think that Jack Black and Kate Winslet's characters have 10 kids minimum. I think they do nothing but procreate. I think
absolutely
that's what they do. Jude Law and Cameron Diaz would make the most beautiful children on the planet. I don't think they have one kid. I think that they just focus on the two that he has in the prior relationship.
Absolutely.
And meanwhile, Jack Black and Kate Winslet are making a whole football team.
I absolutely kind of agree with you on that. Like, they're going to fill up Amanda, the Cameron Diaz's character's house, full of children. Like, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because look, they're both like home things. Like, she's a book editor. He's playing the piano. That's a lot of sex that can happen in between those two activities. Let's be real. You know?
I have a question real quick. Because you guys brought him up a bunch before we move on. This is going to sound really bad. Arthur, who you guys brought up a bunch in the conversation with Billy, played by Eli Wallach. Can you tell me like why he's a big deal? Because I remember like watching him in the movie, but I also know, like, isn't he like a famous movie star or writer or something from like actual Hollywood? Like, what's the deal with Eli Wallach? Do you guys know his background?
So he's a famous character actor.
Yeah.
From like old school time. So like he was in The Good and Bad, The Ugly One. He was
in Magnificent Seven. He probably has the dirt on every major Hollywood star from Clark Gable to Clint Eastwood to whoever else in between. Like, he probably, and you see a little bit of it in the movie, he probably would, is just that guy who you just want to invite to dinner just to hear the stories. Like, I enjoy talking. I would not say a word in the presence of Eli Wallach at the dinner table just because I want to hear everything that he remembers from his time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Because I remember, like, at an Oscars, he, like, came out. He's no longer with us, correct?
No. I think he died a few years ago, but he actually was able to get an honorary Oscar before he passed away. Yeah.
I remember that. And I don't remember what it was for. So that's kind of cool. Okay. Thanks. Sorry.
Yeah. His honorary Oscar, like, honorary Oscars are for your body of work. So like Cicely Tyson is another one who got an honorary Oscar. She was only nominated once and never won, but like the Governors Association will be like the contributions that this person made. But yeah, he's never really been a starring role, but like, just like a supporting actor, you know what I mean? And that was never really top dog, but he's been in some of the greatest movies you've ever seen. Also, very short-lived Aaron Sorkin television show called Studio City on the Sunset Strip. He's in that one and has a really great role in that one. And I think those are the only things that I've seen him in. He's got tons of other credits, you know, stage, film, TV. And I think it fits with him because he actually does remember those days of Hollywood. He may not have been a writer at that time, but he was that dude. So
I got one. I'm going to save it. I have Eli Wallach trivia after we do mailbag. Eli Wallach trivia.
Okay. I'm down for it. All right. So without that, let's go ahead and break open the mailbag. From a member of the Ketchup crew, Joffrey D'Andrea. Joffrey, if I got that wrong, sorry. But
I think it's Jeffrey.
Joffrey's, is it Joffrey? Oh, yeah. That's right.
Joffrey's the evil king, the little kid king.
But isn't
from
that
Game of
spelled
Thrones.
That way? Joffrey.
No. Yeah. That's how Jeffrey the giraffe from Toys R Us spells it.
I don't know. Well, Joffrey D'Andrea.
How do you know that?
I know.
Because I'm a kid that grew up in America. Wait.
I was never allowed.
Did you want to grow up?
No.
Or were you a Toys R Us kid? Yeah, because there's a million toys.
For all of us to play with. Yeah.
Anyways, so Mr. Tiantria sent us a note saying, "Hey, RT is Wrong crew. I'm a new listener and becoming a big fan of the podcast, although I recently saw that Basic Instinct was at 55. I really hope you guys could break that score down." Well, sir, I think we should. And I think we especially should because the director of this, Paul Verhoeven, has several films that would be like key for Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. This is the man that directed Showgirls. He directed Starship Troopers. And he has a new film about two nuns who are doing lots of Basic Instinct things back in the 17th century called Bernadetta that is going to hit theaters pretty soon. He also did the movie L, which...
Forgetting you're burying the lead here, Jacqueline.
Which one?
RoboCop.
Oh, and RoboCop. Yes, of course. He also did RoboCop.
Don't
which is also
and oh, and RoboCop. It's freaking RoboCop.
I'm sorry. I'm bigger on Showgirls. Like Nomi Malone. By the way, I don't think Mark knows this. I have a Showgirls drinking game that will have you wasted in 30 minutes.
Okay, I will play it, but you have to know this going in. And this is embarrassing to admit, I am a Showgirls virgin. I have never seen.
Screw it. Next episode, Showgirls. Like, why have we not done that? I am a Showgirls obsessive. I've seen the docs. I've been to the live musical shows.
Wow.
Me and Showgirls are like here. But man, that's good information. Yeah, I'm seeing some Verhoeven in our future.
And I can get Basic Instinct afresh, I think. I mean, you have the famous scene that everybody is aware of, but yeah. I'm a sucker for a Michael Douglas thriller procedural, whether it's Fatal Attraction, Disclosure, anything with Michael Douglas playing somebody. Now, he's not as rich as he usually plays. I love my favorite Michael Douglas is Rich Guy Michael Douglas, but, you know, cop with some addiction issues, Michael Douglas, I'm in.
Any movie that has a dirty romance novelist in it, I'm down. So let's do it. All right, what's our trivia?
All right, our Eli Wallach trivia is he was a guest star in a few episodes of the classic 1960s Batman TV show, and he played a villain. What villain did Eli Wallach play? Now, keep in mind, that takes out the Riddler, takes out the Joker, takes out the Penguin, and it takes out Catwoman. So what other famous Batman villain was played by Eli Wallach, Arthur from The Holiday?
Bane.
Clayface?
Lucy says Bane and
I don't know any villains.
Jacqueline thinks it's Clayface. I don't think either one of those villains were around back then, but Mr. Freeze was.
Oh yeah.
Mr. Freeze. And now Freeze. I need to go back and watch those episodes. Yeah.
I'm Batman 60. The only thing I remember is that they did the Watusi. I have so like that show is I know more now. Like when I think of Adam West now, I think of him on Family Guy being like yep. Adam yep. West.
He's pretty great. Adam pretty West. Great on Family Guy.
Okay. That's a good one. Stumped us both. Thank you all again for listening. We want to definitely thank Billy Piper. You all can check out Rare Beasts. It's playing select theaters and on streaming on VOD. Also want to thank the illustrious crew back here at Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. We have Brian Perez, Producey Lucy, and my partner in crime, Mr. Mark Ellis. Wherever you're listening to us, please, please, please rate, subscribe, follow. I don't even know. Are there stars and hearts where you're listening? Just make sure folks know that you're a fan of the podcast. And if you have a suggestion for us for a film that we should break down next, please email us at rtiswrong@rottentomatoes. And what we're doing next week?
Ooh, is it Showgirls?
It's a surprise.
Oh, secret. Okay, it's probably going to be Showgirls then.
It should be Showgirls.
Showgirls are Basic Instinct. I'm going to have a good time either way.
I would too. All right, guys. We'll see y'all next time on Rotten Tomatoes is Strong. Bye-bye.